This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah. As of tomorrow, you're going to hear, yeah, after every song again. Yep, he's back. Gareth Cliff will be back tomorrow from Val d'Isère. He's had a great time. He's really refreshed. And being around all that ice and snow, he's going to look youthful. He'll look youthful. I just hope his bags aren't overweight, you know, with all the presents he's bringing back.
Oh, here you go.
Don't get disappointed.
Setting yourself up for failure.
Damn it, he is bringing us presents.
Okay.
Sad right now. But the gift of Justice Malal is already here, and he is in the hot seat for the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's. And, look, Justice, I was going to go into another positive intro from there, but we don't really have a lot of positivity because this is the waiting game.
Actually,
you just changed chairs, sorry.
I don't know about not being so positive. I have to say, it's positive that we know what tomorrow will bring. We have certainty now. We know that President Jacob Zuma doesn't want to go. We know that he'll sit.
Was that ever up in the air?
I have to say, guys, I mean, people like me come here and bang on and bang on. And I have to say, Jacob Zuma continues to bamboozle. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Befuddle, confuse, make dizzy. Mm. I mean, he, you know, I think one of the things I've said on this show, I might be wrong, but one of the things I've said is, when it comes to Jacob Zuma, I'm going to stop applying logical and logic to him.
Yep.
Because it doesn't work.
Yeah, can't be trusted.
It can't be. So you think, oh, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. He comes along and says 1 + 1 = 4. Mm. And he makes it 4. You can say whatever you like, that's not logical. So you would have thought he loses power in the ANC. Cyril Ramaphosa becomes the president. Cyril Ramaphosa has a bit of a majority in the NEC and in the top six, certainly in the National Working Committee. You'd have thought anyone logically would have said, you know what, I've done my 10 years, it's time for me to step down if these guys ask me. And they do ask you. And he doesn't do anything about it. He just thinks, no, I want my security detail. I want you to make sure that all my legal fees, not just for me, but for my extended family and everyone else around me, I want all my 21 car security detail, all that kind of stuff. It's not logical.
But, Justice, the word constitution and constitutional, these kind of things come in. So yesterday, in the 10 minutes that I could fathom carte blanche, there was the whole thing about him standing there with his hand in the air. I will uphold the constitution. I will do right by it. And then it's a constitutional court basically saying you are the weakest link.
Yeah.
So all of this kind of stuff, it always goes back to him and the constitution are two things that do not mix. They are oil and water.
No. Jacob Zuma is actually, I think, a very good constitutionalist. He knows how to use it to his advantage. So you bring charges against him. He says, give me my day in court. But the constitution gives me the right to challenge and to challenge and to challenge and to challenge. So you think about the 783 charges or counts of fraud, corruption, and racketeering against him, emanating back to the early 2000s. He's still fighting those, by the way. And he says, it's my constitutional right. Ben, you now want to take away my constitutional rights? You are a terrible human being. If you think about his successes in the ANC, he's used the ANC constitution to trump the ANC. So I think what's interesting now constitutionally, what we're going through, is that Jacob Zuma knows that we run a party system. A party system means that, you know, I know Mabali likes running around the office saying, oh, you know, when I voted for Jacob Zuma. No, Mabali, you didn't vote for Jacob Zuma. You voted for the ANC.
Yeah.
We run a party system. And the party then nominates a candidate for president. And the candidate then, you know, if that party wins, becomes president. So if you go back to, say, we took our system straight from the Brits. So let's take the Labour Party when Tony Blair fell out of favor. And so they didn't go to, in the party, they said, my brother, we no longer have faith in you, da 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 da. In their top executive, it was clear that he'd lost power. So he resigned because his party didn't want him anymore.
Yeah.
He resigned and someone else, Gordon Brown, I think, took over. In South Africa, same thing happened with Thabo Mbeki in 2008. The party said to Thabo Mbeki, my brother, we've lost faith in you. It's time for you to step down. And he didn't fight it. He said, thank you very much. Called a press conference for a live reading of his speech, basically, on a Sunday evening. And we all sat there with our remote controls, wanting to watch the 8 o'clock movie, but also caught with that. Anyway, he read his thing saying, I've been a member of the ANC for 40 years or whatever it was, and goodbye. Jacob Zuma's love of the constitution is that it gives him an out. Even if the ANC says, you are now recalled, he can say, yes, but I'm not sure about you guys, you party ANC. And you know, Jacob Zuma has always said, oh, I will listen to the ANC, da, da, da. But he can turn around and say, I'm not listening. I'm not convinced by you guys. You'll remember that last Sunday evening when the top six of the ANC went to see him. By the way, the Sunday Times, I thought it was a very delicious line. The Sunday Times reports that he told them, how can you arrive so late when I've closed my gates?
Okay, Mr. And President.
I was thinking, no, man, does this guy, it's like my dad when we were kids. You know, my dad said, I'm going to lock the gate. It's 6 o'clock now.
He actually said that.
Bunch of, anyway, apparently he said that. But it's been 7 days now since they first asked him. I think that Jacob Zuma will now say, if you want to take it on, take me to Parliament and have your motion of no confidence in me.
Jeez.
He's in for the long game here. So again, it's like applying, like we said about the logic and reasoning. That's out the window. He is in for the long game. This is the kind of guy that will play Monopoly against you and steal all the cards and the money.
It's just
and deny it.
It's just amazing, though, how many moves he still keeps, you know, in his bag of tricks, and he dishes it out. He's like, okay, there's my mood. Now what?
Yeah, but yeah. As Justice says, he's finding ways in the Constitution to manipulate it, because that's what he does. He exploits everything.
So think about what happens if the ANC goes to... So there's a motion of no confidence scheduled for the 22nd of February. That's the EFF one. So if the ANC today says in its NEC, we're recalling him, he says, no, I'm not going to resign off my own bat. They then take a decision that, okay, Baleka, we are asking you to call a sitting of the House to have a motion of no confidence in the president of the ANC. Let's say they say, let's aim for, today's Monday. Let's aim for Thursday. Jacob Zuma says, okay, so the ANC has 279 members of parliament. So they can just arrive, vote, and he's out. Mm. But he can say, out of those 279, do you think Bongani Bongo or Musebenzi Zwane or Faith Mutambi are going to vote against Jacob Zuma?
No, I mean, it depends what they've got to lose. So I'm going to guess no, they're not going to vote against him.
So he's calculating, out of the 279, maybe I can get 100, 120 to vote against the motion of no confidence. And then he'll think, if I was Julius Malema, do I want Jacob Zuma to go?
Yes.
No. Jacob Zuma is a gift. If Jacob Zuma goes now, you're sitting there and Cyril says,
now
all
you need
the,
a plan
he
B.
Speaks nicely. And
Cyril's got all his policies like land reform and that kind of stuff.
But Julius would also say, you know what? Think about what happened in the ANC in the city of Cape Town. The ANC said, we hate Patricia de Lille, da 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 da. We hate her. And so they put a motion of no confidence in Patricia de Lille. And the ANC said, yeah, we're going to bring her down. Then suddenly the DA said, oh, yes, we also don't want our guy, Patricia de Lille. We're going to vote with you, ANC. And the ANC said, oh, no, no, sorry, sorry. I don't want that motion of no confidence anymore.
Okay. Sorry, it was on the wrong setting. Fix it.
Stop. So you have this. So did the ANC want Patricia de Lille out, or did the ANC want the DA to be in trouble, Jay?
Mm.
And so the EFF and the DA might say, you know what? We've been telling you, ANC people, get rid of Zuma. Now you want to come here and be, yes, we got rid of Zuma. No, we're not going to vote with you. We're just going to, in fact, we're going to increase your troubles. So we'll vote against Jacob Zuma going with the Jacob Zuma guys. And you know who will be left standing?
Jacob.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've left me standing looking like a bit of a doer, so it'll be Cyril again.
Exactly.
Cyril's holding all of this because, I mean, this poor guy's got disaster after disaster he's trying to alleviate, and he can't. But just this whole time frame, we haven't got a lot of time because the budget speech is coming. So all this politicking around in circles, what does it mean for that?
We've got the budget. The budget is scheduled for usually 2 p.m. and already set for 2 p.m. on the 21st of February. You know, we laugh about it, we look at it and so forth. But actually, I think we are in a constitutional crisis in South Africa. Certainly, if you think about it, we have traditions. We have parliament. The president calls for the State of the Nation address. And it happens in the first or second week of February. That is why FW de Klerk could announce on February 2 that Nelson Mandela will be released on February 11, 1990. Not since the new South Africa has a single State of the Nation speech been cancelled or postponed or rescheduled. It's run like clockwork since Nelson Mandela 1994. Throughout the ages, throughout the years. Since last Sunday evening, when the ANC top six visited President Zuma and told him it's time to go, and he said, no, I don't, as Paul Mashatile actually told us in that clip, I don't believe you guys. Go back and let's see where you're going to end up. So we are now in day seven since that evening. And we haven't had a president, actually, because Jacob Zuma's diary is completely open. He has not done anything. We don't know what he does in his office. The ANC keeps on meeting and saying, trust me, you have patience, da da da. But they are not in charge because they are not my president. They are a political party sitting on the sideline somewhere. So you've got this incredible, weird situation where essentially, we are on autopilot. We are a country that for 7 days has not or does not know who is running this thing. Or let me put it this way. It's like flying into O.R. Tambo Airport on a very cloudy, you know, those bumpy days when you come into O.R. and you think, jeepers, what's going on? And there's thunderstorms and so forth and so forth. And you hear an announcement saying, oh, the pilot decided to take a nap, and we're going to do it all on autopilot. And
see what happens.
The autopilot just takes you through the biggest, heaviest cloud, and woo, wow! And you're thinking, ooh, what's going on here? And I think that's where we are. So the pressure is mounting. If we can't deliver the budget, it means that the ratings agency, or the one ratings agency which still likes us, Moody's, will definitely, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It's impossible for them not to.
Yeah. And then you have government seizing up, because if people haven't been allocated monies by Treasury, then what happens? before that. Now, the key thing here is to remember that Jacob Zuma won't care. Jacob Zuma doesn't think that's his problem.
No,
he will just keep going and doing what he likes. For the rest of us, who want to see government performing, executing what it's supposed to execute, it's a total, absolute disaster.
Those words, they just come too freely, don't they?
Disaster and Jacob Zuma come very freely.
But just, towards the start of the feature, you're talking about this whole negotiation of how his exit terms are, that kind of stuff. Now, I know that, again, we're going back to Zuma logic, which is basically no logic, but this can't be allowed, though. If we're talking about constitution again, and like I was saying, those two don't go together, and he just exploits it. He doesn't respect it, he exploits it. Is this another step where he's just exploiting it by saying, look, I don't care what's said, I'm just going to want to get this terms out because I've got so much power?
I think it's partly because Jacob Zuma doesn't care. Secondly, that he believes he can get away with it. I think this past week has underlined what the past 5 years have taught us, and it's that actually sometimes South Africans need to realize that the political party as a vehicle for change is limited, and the ANC as that political party that will, it will free us, it will make us amazing and great again and so forth, has its own problems. So I'm interested in people who are saying, actually, Jacob Zuma, people need to go out on the streets. So there have been people claiming to be a Jacob Zuma get out movement and so forth, who's saying lock down Tshwane today and so forth. They are small, and they are not organized, and they're a bit meaningless, really. But I think the key thing here is to realize that the ANC is divided, that Cyril Ramaphosa does not have as much power in the ANC as he would like to have to bring about the changes that he wants to see, and that actually the battle may have to go to the streets. And by the streets, I mean that civil society, people who have been saying Jacob Zuma needs to take responsibility for the mess that he's caused. I think South Africans need to realize that two men, Cyril Ramaphosa and Jacob Zuma, in a room together, are not going to bring about the change.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking this weekend. If there was ever a time for a Zuma Must Fall march, sing along, whatever.
I think that is the kind of pressure that people will have to bring to bear. And I think what we're likely to see is talking about the opposition and whether they would vote with the ANC. Of course, they'll want maximum pressure. And so I think they would want to embarrass the ANC by not voting with it, by trying to expose its hypocrisy that, now you want us to vote with you. All along, you didn't want to vote with your conscience and so forth. But I think one of the things that the opposition would want to do is to go to the streets and say, expose the ANC for what it is. It's been protecting this man for 10 years. And continues to do so. And so maybe it's time for people to show that in a democracy you can protest, and protest might be perhaps the next step in this whole battle. The longer Jacob Zuma stays, I think if I was Julius Malema or Musi Maimane or Tirale Kota, I would be thinking seriously about maybe it's time to say to people, this is a delinquent in the office, and he refuses to budge. But the ANC is basically unable to dislodge a man that it doesn't want from office. And I think that that speaks to what David Mabuza achieved in December, the ANC conference. He wanted a unity ANC, but a unity ANC meant that the absolutely compromised. If you think about the NEC of the ANC, Mduduzi Manana beat up a woman in a nightclub. The visuals are there. He was vicious. Mduduzi Manana was convicted and paid, I don't know, 100,000 rand fine in the Randburg Magistrates Court. 3 months later, the ANC voted him onto the top, onto the National Executive Committee. In that NEC, you have Museveni Zwane, a man whose office has just been raided by the Hawks. You have Faith Mutambi, who just keeps on hiring and hiring more and more people from her village in Limpopo. It's like, what's going on here? So maybe that kind of structure is so compromised, it is unable to get rid of a Jacob Zuma because so many of the people on it are so tied up with what's happening in that administration.
That's exactly what Jacob was creating the whole time. It's like a safety buffer.
It's a safety buffer. And that's why I think even the meeting today may not yield what many people expect. I think that there is a swing towards Cyril Ramaphosa and that NEC. I think people like Fikile Mbalula, I think people like Malusi Gigaba. I was very interested in a tweet by Michael Matrata, who is Gigaba's spokesperson at National Treasury, saying that, you know, I believe it's time for the old man to make way. And I think that sentiment is increasing inside that NEC. But it's still a very problematic structure. It's still a very compromised structure in many ways.
But it is going to be a swing because ultimately what we've seen from all these politicians over the last few years is that all they crave is employment. They don't have morals or structure or like the want to do good by society. They're looking for employment. So
let's not be too hard on them, you know. That's just human nature.
Yeah, but I mean, it's career politicians, basically, what I'm getting at here. So their career is Cyril. Their career isn't Jacob. Jacob's the pastor.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the things that if you take Fikile Mbalula, for example, Fikile, I think, is about 45, 46 years old. He still has 20 years or more of politics in him.
Yeah.
Do you want to be clinging on to the past? Malusi Gigaba has always wanted to be president of South Africa one day. He's 45, 46, maybe 47. Do you want to be holding on for another 20 years to, I'm fighting for Nkosazana or for Jacob Zuma and so forth? No. You want to be with the winning team and to stand in line for the succession, to be ANC president one day and maybe president of South Africa one day. So I think all those guys, particularly the younger members of cabinet, you know, your Mamoloko Kubayis, others like that, I think that Jacob Zuma is going to lose or has lost them already. If you take the deputy minister of communications, Stella Ndabeni Abrahams, you know, she is someone who's considered to be the next layer of leadership. Those people are not going to stick around talking, defending the Guptas for Jacob Zuma. I don't think it's happening. So the Jacob Zuma lot, you can see who they are. A young journalist from CNBC Africa landed in Dubai yesterday from an Emirates airline flight. And she saw as she walked into the airport that there were two people waiting there with boards saying Minister Faith Mutambi and another one saying Minister David Mahlobo. And
did they get lost at the Bloemfontein Airport?
They were in Dubai. And it's always interesting for me where they are overnighted. Was it the Oberoi Hotel? And who paid the bill? Was it Ashu Chawla, the CEO of Oak Bay Resources, who seems to have paid?
I don't think they were there on a Groupon.
No, I don't think they were there on a Groupon. Anyway, David Mahlobo was on his way to Egypt. We're not sure what exactly he's doing there, but he's on government business, apparently. We still don't know what Faith Mutambi was doing in Dubai. but we won't speculate. She has the right to go on holiday to Dubai.
She does. That is true. But I mean, like, Justice, in your personal opinion, like, where does someone like Faith Mutambi go from here? Because I don't think the word dynamic or someone who's given to the community is going to be something to be defined what she's done in the Zuma legacy.
Look, I mean, Faith Mutambi, it's amazing. You know, Sia, as an older geezer, I want to give you advice, my son. You know, and you know, I want you to take it to heart, because you know, Faith Mutambi was fired from her previous job as some manager in a municipality in the far north. I can't remember the name of it off the top. She was fired, okay? She was a low-level regional leader of the ANC, and Jacob Zuma plucked her from that job and made her communications minister. In her job as communications minister, we know now from the Gupta leaks that she used to send emails to Ashu Chawla saying, "These are the powers and this is what we discussed in cabinet. These are the powers that the president has given me. So, you know, talk to me here. I'm here. I'm waiting. I'm ready." So, all I'm saying to you, Sia, you see, you know, when you fail, you know, dust yourself off, son. Mm. Dust yourself off and keep going. Because you know what? Success is just over the rainbow. Mm. That's what I'm saying.
And so, this is also a nice reminder of, as is the case with most things in life, it's all about who you know. You've got to be connected to the right people. Otherwise, it's a waste. It's pointless otherwise.
Yeah, that didn't come from me.
Well, it's also pertinent, let's be honest.
But Mabale clearly is far more astute about the workings of life than many of us took that she knew. Anyway, what happens to her? Ben, what happens to someone like Faith Mutambi, in my view, is that there should be a criminal trial. She should face scrutiny in that criminal trial, and the prosecution must prove her guilty for her association with the Guptas, particularly how it happened that the SABC handed over all its rights to MultiChoice and DSTV over its archives while she was communications minister, and particularly how the decisions around set-top boxes were taken to favor certain interests. It would be interesting to see how she comes out of that. If not, then good luck to her. She will become a great leader of the ANC, maybe, or something like that. But quite frankly, these are people who are not interested in clearing their names. So I sit there and wonder how exactly we can continue with someone like her in our cabinet. But it's what it is. I saw a story. There are so many scandals doing the rounds that I didn't even bother to read it much. But you might have seen the story that over the Christmas holidays, she went berserk and just hired more and more and more people in her office, including a protocol officer. What is the minister of the public service, where we all agree it's bloated, it needs to be cut down? What is she doing with a protocol officer? Essentially, this is a minister who is exactly like Jacob Zuma. They think that they're royalty, not servants of the people.
Mm. Yeah, well, Justice, we're going to leave it on that line, that slice of reality, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to start with, royalty is a bit of a farce, because we just know some family got uppity with some other people back in the day. And politics is about serving the people.
Exactly.
It's serving themselves. It's just
That's
so
what
sad.
It should be about. But just on that note, about Faith Mutambi and David Mashobo being in Dubai staying in Dubai for a while before going on to wherever they were going. Gordimer Ntashe said something very interesting on Saturday. He was speaking at one of the ANC rallies, and he said, we are aware that there is exit looting. Exit looting is an interesting concept. When the apartheid regime was falling apart in the 1990s, there was a lot written about, and I remember a journalist, and a great journalist called Sean Johnson, writing a column saying, the shredders are shredding in Pretoria. And it was basically people who shredding every bit of evidence of what they did and files and so forth. And if you read Henny van Vieren's book about monies that were stolen as the apartheid regime crumbled, it seems to me that we need to be very careful about what's going on now.
Yeah.
When people realize
that time of desperation.
Time of desperation, and people thinking, I might go to jail, my family might go to jail, how do I take out some insurance? So I suspect that there are many, many people getting on flights to Dubai to stash some cash away, if they can, or finding other ways to externalize. But I think we are really, when Cyril Ramaphosa talks about transition, maybe we don't realize, but there is a big transition going on, and many people want to make sure that they don't get caught and that they have a pension down the line. So it's a time to keep your eyes open. If you work at OR Tambo, you might see a man or a woman in a bag or two.
Yeah, this hand luggage situation. You're allowed 7 kilograms, I think.
Yes, but you do know a few weeks ago someone was caught trying to get out 6 million, yeah. 7 million rand. So it will be interesting to see how many and how much we can get back from all those things. But I think that there is an extent of exit looting, and I found it a very interesting little anecdote by Gordimer Ntashe there.
Well, exit looting would suggest that, as you're saying, the tide is starting to turn and a matter of time. Or does that mean that everyone goes around saying, when your days are numbered but you can't count, with a picture of Jacob Zuma? I see that meme probably every single day, whether it's on WhatsApp or social media. Justice, thanks so much. Back next Monday. Gareth will be here next Monday. And as we keep saying at the end of every single Monday now, maybe next time round we have something very exciting to say. As in,
I no longer want to say.
I know.
We decided, Ben, we're no longer playing logic.
Yeah,
I don't know. But I mean, I've still got boyish hope.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
Okay, put it this way. The next burning platform, brought to you by Nando's, when Jacob Zuma is not the president, I reckon we get Nando's in here, but we have a party. We have wings, all kinds of things.
I am ready to party the morning after the news gets confirmed.
Yeah, it has to be confirmed. All right, Justice, thanks so much. We need to get over to Rich with some more reality, this time more of a sort of a conventional reality that can be applied to certain people. Sia, have we got Rich on Skype or telephone? Skype. Okay, before we get to Rich, we need to just remind you that One Plan Pet Parade, that was last week on Casper's show last week. There was the announcement of the listener prize of, do you look the most like your pet? So if you catch that podcast on cliffcentral.com, you'll be able to see who that was. But did you know that pets may help you live longer? According to a 2017 study in Sweden, having a dog may lower your risk of dying from cardiovascular diseases or other diseases. So make sure you have pet insurance for your cat or dog to get them quality medical care when they need it. That's with One Plan, where you can insure the health of your pets from as little as 133 Rand per month. SMS Cliff to 31644 and One Plan will call you back. So they make it very, very easy for you. All you have to do is SMS Cliff to 31644. On the Skype, we've got Rich Mulholland. Rich.
Good morning.
Hello, Rich. Do you have pet insurance for your dogs, Rich, your dogs and cat?
We do have pet insurance for our dogs.
Let's see. Well, Rich has got it, so there we go. Point proven, smart guy on it. What's happening, Rich? What's going on in the Cape Town?
Well, not enough rain still, but, you know, we live in hope.
Yeah, because there were all that talk about there's going to be like 10 millimeters, and then it was like 1 millimeter.
Yeah, that's actually what makes it worse, right? There's something about an expectation management. Is that we all knew that there was no rain, and we were kind of used to living with no rain.
Yeah.
But then when you have this perception of something big happening, when it doesn't happen, you're actually more disappointed than you were in the first place before you thought it was going to be. If that makes sense.
Well, what makes it even worse on top of that, I almost said more worse, but then again, guys like Pastor and Boro talking about rain like never before, and all these clickbait websites picking up on the fact that a prophet's word is something to actually add to this crisis. That really gets me in the balls.
Yes, the rain dances of all faiths are quite amusing to me.
So, Rich, I saw you having a bit of a tour on Twitter over the weekend with some guys over some passive-aggressive feminism stuff.
Oh, yes. So, well, let me actually address a little bit of that first off the bat. So the one thing for me that I sometimes, and that kind of leads into the topic I want to talk about today, mm-hmm. is often if you disagree with somebody on Twitter, what you would do is it's quite easy to engage in a conversation. You hit the reply button and yeah. you chat back to them. You deliver, you know, your response. To me, it's very easy to turn that reply into a grandstanding. And the grandstanding is to hit retweet instead of reply. Yeah. And then to say your amazingly smart comment on top to say, hey, look what this person said, but look how smart I am to reply to them. The equivalent for me of that is if you're sitting in a restaurant and somebody turned around and said to you something, the equivalent, instead of replying to them and saying, hey, this is what we're doing, is to stand up in the restaurant, to tell everybody in the restaurant what that person said, and then to tell them how smart your answer was to them. So sometimes when people do that, I like to have fun with them by actually taking the other side.
But I mean, in the world of social media, Rich, the real currency lies in how many retweets you can get. It very rarely has to do with the content of the actual conversation.
Yes, and I guess that's a perception. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that people often say to me, and it's actually the reason we're working on an upcoming project called Conclave, is that people will turn around to me and say to me, oh, Twitter is broken. But no, Twitter isn't broken. Our perception of what Twitter's job is broken. Twitter used to be about going on the internet and finding cool stuff about cool stuff that's happening, making yourself smarter by other people doing curation for you. So you've chosen to follow 50 people, and then those 50 people you followed because you know that they have good opinions about a range of things that you're interested in. So by following them, by going onto Twitter in the morning, what you do is you get a good range of thought from a lot of people. Now, that is still working perfectly. In fact, the only thing that's broken is we're following more people than we have attention available for. Yeah. So I kind of feel that 100 is the optimal number. If you're following more than 100 people, you have a certain amount of attention banks available to you, and those are all getting used up. Therefore, you're not seeing the work that all your curators are doing for you. So if Twitter is broken in that regard, it's because we broke it ourselves with our gluttony. Our follow gluttony. We follow so many people. We want so much information that we end up not getting to eat from the whole buffet. And then on the flip side, the real reason that we think Twitter is broken, though, is because we believe that its job is to glorify us. We believe that its job is exactly that, to earn ourselves retweets. So what happens is I'll post a new video that I've released on Twitter, and I'll get one or two retweets on Twitter. And maybe a couple of likes. Whereas if I post it on Facebook, I'll get, you know, so many more. If I put it on LinkedIn, even I'll get more. Hell, even just on YouTube itself. And then I get frustrated. Oh, well, Twitter's broken. But it's not. It's just the way that we're using it. We need to practice going on a little bit of an information diet, I think, if we want Twitter to work well again.
That's really smart, Rich, because I often see the same thing. Like Facebook, yeah, you get so much more likes for that kind of stuff. And I think Twitter, we scroll so heavy. We definitely scroll. I think there should be a scroll ratio on all social medias, and Twitter is going to be the fastest one.
Yeah, listen, it's the counterpoint to Metcalfe's law. So without this sounding like a punt, it's a project I'm working on at the moment, and it's too early to get involved, so it's really not a punt. It's actually the opposite of that. I'm creating an antisocial network. And so the idea is this, that you, at the beginning, you can only follow up to 10 people. And so you have 10 people in your kind of private meeting. And the idea is that you have to earn reputation in order to add more people, up to a maximum of 100. And then what happens, instead of you sharing information with all 100 in your group, no matter how many people, you know, between anywhere from between 10 and 100 that you have, at any time you find anything cool to share, you have to select just 3 people in your network that you want to share it with. So then when I open up my little Conclave app and have a look at it, anything that is shared with me is shared intentionally with me. So if I see an article appear there from you guys, I will know that the Cliff Central team thought that me specifically, of all the people that they have in their network, they felt that me specifically and 2 other people would really, really get value out of this. So at that point, that what we're doing is we're being intentional about trying to make people smarter, not to make ourselves seem better. And then if I read that and get value out of it, you earn reputation. If I end up sharing it with somebody else, you get even more reputation. This all happens behind the scenes. You don't necessarily get notified. It's not about that. It's about the idea of constantly trying to be as valuable to the people in your network as possible. Because I feel that what we try to do too much with social media is it stopped being about giving value with smart things we're saying, and it started being about taking value with how smart we're appearing. And I feel that I want to try and rebalance that. And I also want the curation that's done for me to be more intelligent than this, than just, I think Mabs is smart, therefore anything she says I should see. And rather have it be, she shared this article with me because she knows how I feel about religion. Therefore, this is something that's been curated just for me, and I want to read it. And I feel like we need to be more intentional about the information we put in our head.
Yeah, well, damn right. This goes back to the word gluttony that you used. You know, if you're so gluttonous around this kind of stuff, you're not getting the best. And it's whether it be literally for food or for the information, it works the same purpose.
Right. I put a thing on Twitter yesterday, and it says that, that line that people always put, and I think it's the biggest lie, it's that my opinions are my own. I guess to some degree we have control over our opinions and the people we choose to follow, but algorithms do a lot of work for us. And I think that rather than being gluttonous on just one topic that speaks to your opinions, I think we all need to commit to follow more diverse groups of people, to have different opinions from different people. And then we need to seek not to be to argue, but to learn from more often than not, to understand where other people come from, even when we disagree with them. A lot of people follow Donald Trump for the sole purpose of arguing with everything he says. Now, I'm not going to debate the guy. I mean, some people actually love him, some people hate him. That's almost not that important. What's important is to try and follow people, and instead of seeking to rebut everything they say, seek to work out if there's something in what they're saying can be logical. And even if you end up disagreeing at the end of it, at least you now have a better sense of a more rounded opinion getting built. Right now, we don't do that. We see that name come up of that person we're following just to dislike, and we immediately decide that no matter what they say, even if it held true with their own views going in, will find a reason to argue with them. And I don't think that's very smart. And I don't think it's a great way to live.
No, exactly. And we've spoken many times on the show about these echo chambers that people find themselves in. And then everyone's just shouting at each other. There's no conversation. So hence the antisocial network.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm trying to create, is a network that's not built around being social, but built around intentionally learning. About becoming smarter, and not just smarter in information, but smarter in sense of opinion and understanding of others' point of views.
Well, Rich, like anything else?
And incidentally, to loop back around to the original argument I had on Twitter yesterday, I ended up trying to give the person a taste of their own medicine by showing them the kind of frustrating approach that they were taking and kind of putting it back out there. And the whole reason, I guess, to some degree, we're having this conversation is that I felt that I'd kind of gone down to their level, which If you follow the thread, you'll see that I was trying to get out of a few times. And I kind of left that conversation feeling like I could have done a little bit better. And I dislike that. But it's a chance to learn.
Exactly, which every new day is. Rich, thanks so much for your time as always. So we'll catch you back hopefully next Monday. Gareth will be back next Monday. His skiing trip's done, but are you going skiing now? I'm sure there was an overlap.
The following Monday, I'll be away. Next Monday, I'll be here.
Okay, cool. And then you guys can talk. So basically next Monday, the two of you can talk snowboarding for, I think, 10 minutes. And then we'll get back to normal programming.
That'd be amazing.
3 weeks after that.
Yeah, the rest of you can go like send a tweet or something. Okay, awesome, guys. Thanks so much and have a wonderful week.
All right, Rich, you too, man. Always great chatting. Like, he's just smarter than us, isn't he?
A lot of people are smarter than us.
Well, also true. Yeah. Damn it. I walked into that one.
No, but it's also a smart move to surround yourself.
No, but really on a Monday though, Anthea is here.
Yes.
Justice is here. Uh-huh. Rich is here. A lot of people are smarter than us, guys. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, but the thing
that's
is,
just the
thing
the way
is,
it is.
The thing is that Mavs, we're here. And being present sometimes in life, that's also something.
There we okay? go.
So let's not be so hard on ourselves here.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of being present, Gareth will be present tomorrow with presents.
No, okay. Better
better have presents. At the very least, I want a snow globe.
So are you going to get upset?
That right.
Why?
Why not?
Why not?
Why do you want to take this from me? Why?
No, this little entitlement thing, but okay.
Little entitlement thing?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what it smells like, Ben.
Putting in the extra yards here for what? For what? And now I'm entitled?
It's just a job, but okay.
And now I'm entitled? Well, today's been fun, other than Sia dogging me. Sia, have we got time? Should we... You know, I had this videos about this TV preachers.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do it like after to take a song, do that, then go to Sophie and Dabba?
I don't even think we have to take a song. We can do it now.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's like this hour's running really late and... Yeah, screw it.
If we take a song, then it breaks up the podcast and then it's confusing.
Okay, see, this is where I need to consult with you.
Thank you.
It's teamwork. See, it makes the dream work. So, you know, on this show, Gareth has played all these like TV preachers and they're entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're funny. And we've obviously showcased a few of the big names, these absolute charlatans. But there's one that we haven't actually touched on. And it turns out he's actually like the biggest of all of them.
Okay.
Turns out he really loves the Jets. And he does not want you to worry about how many Jets that he has. So This is like, it's a few minutes, but it's well worth the listen. And it's these guys. You talked about Jacob Zuma and the fact that he feels nothing. He's got nothing on these guys. He really actually doesn't.
Some of the most popular TV preachers in the country.
We're family here.
They urge the faithful followers to donate generously, and in return, the Lord will bring them prosperity.
I'm not going to be going to heaven and be broke when I get there.
And there's no denying some people have prospered handsomely.
Wow!
The pastors themselves. They live like rock stars with huge mansions, private jets, and fancy cars. Their lifestyles are so lavish, six of them have been investigated by the U.S. Senate. Like Paula White, who lives in multi-million dollar homes in New York City and Tampa, Florida. And Creflo Dollar. He gets around in style, flying in private jets to preach around the country. He owns this mansion in an exclusive Atlanta suburb.
Mr. Dollar, how do you...
Not one of them would agree to an interview about their opulent lifestyle.
How do you justify your million-dollar mansions and your jets to all of your donors, sir?
Oh, yeah!
But when it comes to opulence, few religious leaders compare to Kenneth Copeland.
You and I are supposed to always have...
To show you his house, we rented this helicopter so you can see his 18,000-square-foot mansion valued at over $6 million.
He lives in this home outside Fort Worth, Texas. It has beautiful water views and comes complete with a boathouse. But that's not all. Copeland is an avid pilot, and here's his pride and joy, a $20 million Cessna Citation jet. It's the fastest private jet money can buy. He said he needed it to better serve the Lord, and proudly did a flyby for his followers after the church bought it.
Shout amen!
But it's not just one plane. We found a fleet of planes registered to the church. And you won't catch him waiting in line at the airport because he's got his own, the Kenneth Copeland Airport, located right next to his mansion.
I think Copeland is unbelievably greedy.
Only Lily Anthony heads the Trinity Foundation, a religious watchdog group that worked closely with the Senate committee investigating Copeland and other TV preachers.
Televangelism alone is at least a $2.5 to $3 billion industry. Untaxed, unregulated.
That's right. By law, religious groups like Copeland's are exempt from federal taxes, and they don't have to report how they spend their money to anyone.
Amen.
Copeland's church takes in tens of millions a year through donations and selling books and DVDs to his donors.
She sent them a lot of money, a whole lot of money.
When Christy Parker's mother died of cancer, she found diaries that showed her mother sent Copeland most of her life savings, hoping her faith and donations would cure her of her terminal disease.
What do you think of Kenneth Copeland's lifestyle?
TV doesn't do it justice. Their office furniture is probably worth more than most people's houses. It makes you sick.
Oh my.
Copeland refused our request for an interview, so we caught up with him at an event in North Carolina.
Why you're living such a lifestyle of luxury off of church donations?
Ma'am, I don't think we have time for this.
Thank you.
Why won't you answer our questions?
A hotel employee tried to prevent us from taping.
Wait. Hold on.
Come here.
It's just a simple question, sir.
Yes, and I'm going to give you a simple answer.
Thank you.
My lifestyle follows the scripture. We give, we believe, we're open.
You have a fleet of private jets. Why is that necessary? You're a minister. How many private jets do you have?
Right after that, he walked away.
Although Copeland says he cooperated with the Senate investigation, the Senate committee disagreed, saying only two television preachers did, Joyce Myers and Benny Hinn. And the committee recommended that the IRS investigate further.
Oh, jeepers. That's criminal.
He has an airport?
He's got an airport.
Oh, of course.
And he's got a fleet of planes.
When you have several planes, what do you do exactly?
Yeah, you've got to
build
keep
your
them
own
somewhere.
Airport.
Yeah.
And screw this thing of traveling to the airport. Just build the airport right next door to your house.
But also, I mean, if your faithful flock really want to give you all their money, can you be blamed for that? I mean,
I just think that
they are willingly over money to you.
Get that point, that's fine, but they must pay tax. So like any other entertainment business, strippers have got to pay tax.
Yeah.
Sports stars have got to pay tax. Hollywood movie stars have got to pay tax. Preachers should pay tax too, because all they're doing is that they're creating entertainment. What they're doing there is entertainment. So all those, you can't, anyway, Gareth will be back tomorrow. I'm going to give him some other clips. And then everything will be back to normal. But thank you for joining us on this action-packed Monday. And if you missed anything, cliffcentral.com. That's where the podcast will be.
This is cliffcentral.com.